Hi everybody, Lee Honish, giving you daily training, helping you a little bit more with conversion. For those of you who don't know, my name is Lee Honish. I'm the former head loss mitigator for IndyMac Bank's HELOC division. I have a 22-year plus experience as an asset manager, property manager, REO manager for banks like Beneficial of California. I worked for GMAC, then GMAC Homecomings. A couple of property management companies. I did some time as a traditional real estate developer, builder, and realtor, like many of you. And the last 7 years, I worked at IndyMac Bank, first in the home construction lending division. Then I wound up working in the HELOC division, where I was the former head loss mitigator before the company went out of business, before I left them. And for the last 5 years, I've been a short sale trainer. I started off doing just a couple of seminars while I still worked at the bank, worked my way up. And at this point, I've done, I don't know, 500, 600, 700 seminars, 50, 60,000 people. I currently coach a couple hundred people. I have a, what we call in the business, a list of about, 10,000 people or so that are actively on my email list. I've had about 1 million views on the World Wide Web. I have one of the top short sale and real estate websites. If you're listening to this or you're watching the video, depending on how you got a hold of it, you can go to www.honish.com and you can check out my website and more information. So I'm going to steal from my Certified Default Advocacy Training Program. It is a program that I created about 18 months ago. It's trademarked. It's an actual advocacy program. It's actually registered. It's got a team. We've got a logo. We've got a format. We have everything you can imagine. Generally, when I go out and do three-hour trainings these days, it's usually some form of advocacy training. Truth be told, that's going to close me actually doing the advocacy. Used to be able to sign up online, and I know that a few of you have signed up and want more information about it. I will let you know the next time I'm doing a 1 or a 2 day event. We will do certification of another group of advocates. I'm thinking probably March in Las Vegas for a 2 day event. I'll do an advocacy certification. But I'm going to take some slides from that presentation and teach you something about conversion the advocacy way. So the reason there's an advocacy program is because homeowners don't particularly like realtors. Okay, they like them so much less than normal people that they'll call the bank when they're in default and when they're in distress or they have an issue with the bank. That's what makes this program a little more unique. I've actually figured out that homeowners want somebody to protect them and to look out for them. And there's a specific reason for it and a specific mindset. Generally speaking, homeowners don't like salespeople. And real estate salespeople are there to get a listing and not to advocate for them and to do what's in their best interest. Specifically, most real estate agents at the end of the day are just ridiculously average. So what are we talking about? 80% of the real estate agents in the United States are extraordinarily average. They are looking at mediocrity. They're not doing anything that is unique or amazing or different or unusual. And I know that's kind of harsh, and many of you listening to this are saying, no, that's not me, I'm different, I'm unique. Now, the real reality and the real truth of this situation, 80% of the real estate agents don't make a lot of money. They've generally been in real estate industry for about 10 years. Their average age is 55 plus. So you could take technology out of the mix with about 80% of the real estate agents. They generally don't like to work with buyers because, well, buyers are buyers. They're going to go out and they're looking and they don't specifically want a buyer or otherwise. They're not fans of the short sale market or the defaulted market in general. They would still love to get their hands on REO listings and be a part of that market, but REOs don't exist at this moment. On average, they list 6 to 10 properties per year, or about one half to three quarters of a listing per month. I mean, that's a phenomenally low number. And the average is about $34,000 to $36,000 per year. That's not my numbers, that's NAR's number. I just recently did a video on that. And to obtain these half listings per month, they use these techniques that are dated within the industry of doing mass mailers and door knocking and cold calling and sticking to scripts. And there's a specific reason why homeowners don't want to work with these individuals, and it's why they call the bank first for help before calling somebody who's a qualified advocate. So the question then becomes, what is a default advocate? If you're listening to the audio and you want to see the slides that go with this, you can go to honish.com, click on the blog, it'll probably be up there. You can go to YouTube and put in my name and type in the word advocate, and you'll probably get the video as well. For those of you on the video, you got the video. So the question is, what is a default advocate? What is somebody who understands being an advocate to somebody who's in default? All right, well, default is simple. From the minute the owner of a real property fails to meet their monthly obligation on a loan agreement, 31 days at 5 p.m., the real property and or the homeowner then go into what's called default status. The real property only has two legitimate outcomes. One is to cure, that means pay current or pay off, or the title is going to be transferred. Those are the only outcomes after they miss the first payment. The banking term for a missed payment is default. Okay, it's really simple. An advocate is somebody who understands and has the knowledge of what the options are for a homeowner. Simple as that. A default advocate is a person who has the knowledge of how to work with homeowners and properties that has many options available to them. All right? So let's start from the very beginning and basics, right? This is one of the reasons why I'm frustrated. So what is a realtor? Honestly, a realtor should be an advocate. They're there to protect and promote the interests of the clients. I'm obsessed with it. That's straight out of the Realtor Code of Ethics. And I wish it's something that they would get back to, and I think it's something that they need to push more. It's kind of sad that I have to push an advocacy program and create an advocacy program, because really being a realtor should represent that. But it doesn't to a homeowner. A realtor to a homeowner is just somebody trying to make a sale. And it's for a simple reason. Who do you represent and why do you represent them? This has been muddied and sullied along the way, and it's something you probably need to learn. Okay, the bank and seller relationship. A seller owns the property. Okay, the bank owns the note on the house. The note is a lien on the property. The agent works for the seller and not for the bank. The seller and the bank have an adversarial relationship, and they have opposite interests. The bank wants highest and best and most money. The homeowner, the seller, wants the short sale. It is not your job to protect the bank. Your job is to protect the homeowners. I find it extraordinarily frustrating when I go to an office and somebody tells me that they have to get highest and best for the bank, or they have to submit every offer to the bank, or they have to look out for the interests of the bank. You don't have a relationship. You don't have a relationship agreement. You don't have a fiduciary responsibility to do those things. There is no reason for that to happen. So, what are the alternatives to foreclosure for a homeowner? Okay, there's basically four of them. First one's a deed in lieu. A deed in lieu of foreclosure is the same as a foreclosure. It'll still put the words foreclosure on their credit. But if they've destroyed their credit, they haven't paid anything, and the bank comes along and offers them $30,000 to move out in a cash for keys deed in lieu, look, I'm hard pressed to say that isn't a good option for them. Option number two is a loan modification. Loan modification, generally, in my opinion, is a scam of the bank. It buys information from the homeowner. It is a buy of time for the bank so that they can manage their debts much easier. And number three, it buys them actual cash. You know, homeowners will start to pay again. Generally, 80 to 90% of the loan modifications that are handed out are trial loan modifications. And trial loan modifications, as I've done on other videos and talked about in great length, are oftentimes rolled straight into a foreclosure. Because honestly, if you're just paying the bank less than what's agreed on a non-fully executed loan modification, and they don't really, like, a fully executed is like a recast, all right? It's like a rewrite of the terms. Those are real loan modifications. A trial loan modification is still marking you as late, you're still on a clock, you're still going to get a sale date. The third option is a short sale. I'm a fan of the short sale. I push the short sale. I teach the short sale. I teach short sale marketing. Why? Because in 2 years after shafting a bank for hundreds of thousands of dollars, you can go back to that bank and borrow money from them again. And many people in this industry have already seen it, done it. Simple as that. Greatest country on the planet. The last option is a bankruptcy. And I don't have a problem with the bankruptcy after the fact. I think people confuse chapter sevens and what's going to happen with a complete wash, like they're going to get approved and have everything, washed away, and somehow they magically keep a house in a bankruptcy situation. I really, the mindset about what homeowners think will happen, if you're restructuring your debts, then yes, you get to keep your house, but that's something totally different. You don't wipe out all your debts. You don't magically get to keep your house. That's not the way the industry works. So, what qualifies for a short sale? My running joke about what qualifies for a short sale is really simple. Their desire to want to do them. Now, what we're talking about is what is considered a hardship to a bank. And there are basically three of them, right? Because the homeowner wants to do it is really the biggest key to doing a short sale. But amusingly, there are really simple factors to keep in mind, right? Number one is monetary. So if you're writing a hardship or you want a loan mod or a short sale or anything with a bank, it's got to be about money related. Number two, it's relocation. Or number three, it's divorce. Relocation and divorce work pretty well for people who are current. But writing down you want to do a short sale because you're underwater, is not going to work. Saying that it's hard to make the payments when you have, $84,000 in the bank is not going to be really inspiring to a bank to want to help you with a short sale. Very simple, very basic. So, one of the questions that does come up every once in a while, how long does a short sale take? Honestly, I call it AKA, how long can I stay here? From when you start the property, start the listing to the short sale, this is the generic timeline for a generic person doing a short sale. It takes approximately 90 days. If you're taking longer than 90 days and moving into 6 months on your files, you have some serious issues that need to be worked out, and you should consider hiring someone to do the mitigation on your files. Those that are more advanced get them done between 45 and 60 days, but the average is right around 90 for, I would say, a good 20% of the closers. The first 30 days, the short sale package is submitted, the BPO's order and the files assigned to a negotiator. The 30 to 60 day range that you negotiate with the bank and get the counters. At this point, some property is marketed to the buyers and they start to look for the actual offer that they're going to use. It's one of the methodologies depending on where you do it. What I'm teaching is the very generic basic. The 60 to 90 day range, you receive the short sale approval, lock in the buyer, and prepare for closing. Simple as that. 90 days. So if you take a listing, you're from a homeowner, you can, if they don't have a sale date, you can look at 6 months to a year before this thing will close. You can take your time and look for buyers. You can look for the front end and the back end. You don't have to close it as quick as possible, but because a realtor is desperate to close and make money, that's a lot of pressure on a homeowner. Truthfully, they want to stay there as long as they can. The time to negotiate takes about 3 months. What I'm showing you is the generic version of that process. There are always ways around it, and there are ways to speed it up. So, how many liens are on the property? What liens are on the property? It's important when you talk to a homeowner to ask these questions and understand them. First and second's true purchase money positions get wiped out. One action states exist, things of that nature. The big deal is HELOCs, in my opinion. Home equity line of credit is the one to keep an eye out on. Home equity line of credit is the interesting one because if the first goes to sale, even if the HELOC is purchase money, it's a credit term. So they can hire a third party company after the foreclosure to go and collect on it. I don't care what people think about one action and things of that nature. HELOC is regulated within the bank as a credit card. It's not regulated as a real property loan. HOAs have to be negotiated. You've got to find the HOA company or whoever's handling it. You've got to be able to negotiate the liens or get them completely paid off. Same with, third party liens, including child support and things of that nature. These could be huge deal killers. And remember, some states and federal taxes can, you can finally work around those with a short sale, but you need to be aware of all of them. All right, what about deficiency judgments? What happens after? I was told I shouldn't do a short sale because I'm going to get a deficiency judgment. Okay. If you don't know how to handle the bank's loss, and you're basically in violation of your fiduciary responsibility. There are basically two deficiencies that can happen on the close, right? A cash contribution or a promissory note on the close. The Mortgage Debt Relief Act, which is in effect till the end of the year, and hopefully will be extended, wipes out deficiencies and losses. But going into next year, you know, we're going to have to seriously talk about contributions and promissory notes and deficiencies again, for at least tax ramifications. As for the bank asking, you know, you just need to be aware of all of these things. You need to know how the first lien treats deficiencies as compared to HELOCs. Home equity line of credits are going to be more aggressive. They're going to want the 20%. You have to be aware of it. You're going to have to know about 1099 forms, and you're going to need to know about Form 982 of the IRS, and we'll talk about it. Okay? We've moved from deficiencies into when I have to pay for taxes. Yeah, taxes, you know, are a concern for people. There are the Mortgage Debt Relief Act, which currently runs until the end of the year, and may or may not get extended, actually wipes out the tax ramifications from a 1099-C. What I think is amusing to me is the 1099. And won't I get a 1099 if they foreclose? You know, you have to understand the differences here. 1099-A, which is an abandonment of debt, is 10 to 20% higher and happens after they foreclose on you. If a property goes to short sale, they'll get a 1099-C, which is a cancellation of debt. There are basically two ways around it. Okay, so the bank can ask for promissory note or additional cash. That's the deficiency there. On taxes, there's a 1099-A or a 1099-C. So if they foreclose, they get a 1099-A. If they do a short sale, it's a 1099-C. So the 1099-C, the cancellation of the debt, there were two ways around it. Until the end of the year, there's two ways around it. Currently, the Mortgage Debt Relief Act or Form 982 of the IRS. Well, won't a short sale hurt my credit? One of my favorite questions ever asked. The short sale will report on the borrower's credit, the seller's credit. Why does it say borrower's credit? This is a borrower from a bank's perspective. The seller, borrower, same thing. Settled or paid but not in full, or settled for less than agreed. It's much better for a foreclosure. It only has a two-year recovery time. The short sale may have a negative impact on the borrower's credit score up to 200 points, but it will drop off in 2 years. It's the continuous late payments that will really destroy somebody's credit. There's no magic formula to the FICO system. No matter what, in 2 years, this whole thing just drops off. In a foreclosure, it's on there. It's 5 years. It's not going to go anywhere. It is what it is. What if the homeowner has mortgage insurance? Yeah, that's kind of important, and it scares a lot of people away from doing short sales. I'm going to explain mortgage insurance and forced place mortgage insurance real simply. So if I have a next-door neighbor who's an arsonist, and I know they're an arsonist, based on the way it works right now, I can buy fire insurance for that person's home, knowing full well that they're going to burn their house and I'm going to get a payoff. I would get the payoff. So basically, the banks understood that people weren't going to pay on these loans because they were Alt-A subprimes. So they forced place mortgage insurance on those properties. You have to understand that. You have to expect it going into the situation. It's good to ask the homeowner if they're aware, if they're paying for MI. It can come into play. You need to know what it's used for. You need to know why it's there, what it's there for. You need to know up front. Okay. There are two ways to know if MI is sort of real with a bank. It's my running joke. There's real and there's fake MI. If the bank tells you that there's MI on a file, or and you ask them point blank, okay, what's the name of the MI company? There's only a few MI companies. And they tell you that they can't tell you the name of the MI company, then my opinion is there's no MI company and they're probably lying to you. You can also call, because there are so few MI companies, and just go round robin until you call the customer service and try to get a reading on it. Now, some MI is very real, and the percentage of that is very low. It's so low at this moment that I don't think you have to worry about it. It's not even a trend within the industry at this moment. It's such a fleeting thing. Will the bank or anybody want money after the close? Yeah, it can happen, and there's a couple of reasons it can happen. If the four invitations are present, right, So they have strong financials, or it's a really large loss to the first lien, or there's MI involved, all of these things, or the borrower's current. Those are the basic invitations that are saying, I got to have something to present on the close to make this deal close. You could do an unsecured note, it has no credit impact. You can use cash to offset the promissory note. You need to know what to offer them, you need to understand cash versus time scenarios. I always say the same thing. Ask the bank what they want. It's a lot simpler that way. But remember this, there are basically three questions that are going to happen at the conversion, and I'll close on this. Let's say that you're using the Monster process or any kind of direct process you want, and I'll talk about the Monster before I turn this off. I rarely do a full thing on the Monster. When you go to the door, there are really only three questions that a homeowner would have on any kind of conversion. They want to know, because they're doing a loan mod, why the loan modification is bad. They want to know generally how you got their information, and they're trying to work out the cash to live here scenario, right? They're living there, it's for free. If they move, they're going to need money. Those are the basic elements within their mind that they need to understand consistently. Those are the three basic questions that will happen at the door. The rest of those things are knowledge for you to have long term to help you, put a better deal together conversion wise. But everything comes down to being at the front door and making the assistance to the homeowner. I do talk about the Monster quite a bit, and as many of you know, the Monster program is getting ready to close permanently. That's not a hype, that's no BS, as well as default advocacy. Basically, I'm closing down all the programs. You could probably go to a live presentation and see me on a boat on the way from Miami to Jamaica or something and get a training there, or a 2 day in Las Vegas. But generally speaking, there will be no open internet sales of the Monster coaching program, the docs, the default advocate. All of that is basically shutting down. You'll have to go to a formalized training to see any kind of offer to get my marketing and coaching program. It's very simple. Right now for the holidays, I'm telling my students, just go get 18 sale day properties. You need good, reliable data that these are sale day people and that they're in their property. It'll take you about 60 minutes to go visit 18 homes. That puts up about 18 of those monsters. And here's how it basically works. You put up these monsters, you put them on the property. They will call into a call center. They will go through what's called a squeeze. A squeeze generally that will get them either their email address, their phone number. It will also set up a time to go to their house. And what you'll see with the Monster that's unique to any other process, it creates permission base. They're expecting you to show up. They're expecting a delivery of a message. They're expecting you to come to their house. We give you the package. We give you the understanding of what to say. We give you the follow-up. We show you what to say in the follow-up sequence. We show you what other people have used in the follow-up sequence. On 18 leads, you should be able to get about one listing per week. On the very, very, very low end, I'm currently up in Northern California testing it on a very wide, large, large, large scale and with lots and lots of leads. So the Monster works in variations of small to big, however many listings you want. But again, no hype, no BS. Wherever you're listening to this or wherever you see this, if you're watching it on YouTube or on my website, there's probably a link down below to purchase the Monster. All the links that I have to buy the Monster, including the Monster landing page, are going to be turned off in just a couple more days. Probably right around the time I go on Christmas holiday, I'm going to shut everything down. There will be no additional sales. There will not be. What you get with the Monster program, you get the coaching, you get the Monster marketing system, you get into the advocacy program. Certificates, the whole bit, you can call yourself an advocate. All of that's included for one price. There are no monthly fees, and when I close it, it's closed. It's not a sales t pitch. Because if it is, it's the worst sales pitch of all time. I'm closing the doors. I will probably only have probably it depends, but I'm toying with just in-house coaching. After the holiday season with me and Steve, or just going to offices and doing, office makeovers, and then or setting up teams, advocacy teams within the office. So this is your last chance to really get a hold of a product that doesn't get leads, it actually gets listings. So click on the link down below, get involved with the program. It's a very rare and unique opportunity to invest on something that's 100% money back guarantee. So you putting your money, it's $497 for the program. I'm gonna get you a listing in 30 days. I'm even doing it through the holiday season, which is lame. Nobody really gets listings, but if you know me and you know my coaching students, we're getting listings during the holidays because a sale date's a sale date. You give an opportunity to help somebody and to get yourself a listing. And to, you're gonna feel a lot better about it at the end of the day. The things you enjoy about real estate are the things that these people are trying to protect. And being a realtor and being an advocate, actually, they all tie in, and it works with the monster, and it becomes permission-based, and it's a very rewarding, amazing experience. So if you have any questions, go ahead and give me a call. Numbers down below, or email me at lee.honish@yahoo.com. You can visit honish.com/monster, read up more about it if you want. I hope you enjoyed that training. I'll try to get one out every day this week. I won't keep hitting you all week with messages about everything. Check in with you guys about midweek for the big list or wherever you're watching this. But I'll try to get five new trainings up this week. Enjoy.